Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell and I are talking with Dr. Barry Beatty. We're talking about mosquitoes because it turns out that an awful lot of disease is transmitted by, as in vector, mosquitoes. Now tell us about the war. If we've lost the battle against the mosquito, what is the larger confrontation?
Well, it's there's probably, you know, we tend to think of magic bullets all the time. And I think personally that mosquitoes and ticks and other vectors are much too clever for a simple magic bullet. One of the approaches has been a variety of agencies like the MacArthur Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, the World Health Organization have really pushed in the last 10 years or so to really increase the knowledge of vectors and to understand what goes on both in their biology and molecular biology more, with the potential downstream effect of developing new targets for control and so forth. You know, still in meetings that I go to, the mosquito is sort of viewed as a black box. You know, you have, for example, dengue virus infection, and everybody wants to look at what goes on with the virus or what goes on with the virus in human beings. But point in fact is the major part of the life cycle of that virus is spent out there in that mosquito host. And it's always, as I say, been sort of viewed as a black box. You put virus in, virus comes back out. And so there have been these efforts to really bring modern science into this. And then to take the knowledge derived from this modern science and to put it back into the field and perhaps thereby develop some new control strategies. And so there are a lot of things going on. It's been a wonderful time to be in this field because almost everything's new and exciting and makes you say, wow. And and then there are downstream effects to it, you know, such as mosquito genomics and finding new genes and developing new ways to immunize against pathogens that are transmitted by arthropods and so forth. So one hopes that new strategies, et cetera, will come of this. And the other major exciting thing about this, I believe, is the fact that many of the scientists that are being trained in these new cutting-edge efforts are from countries where the vector-borne diseases are really major problems, and we'll go back and hopefully start to build a cadre of trained people to implement new strategies and to build the political will and to get the resources to control these vectors where they're causing so much damage and disease.
All of those things are necessary, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Without the political will, you can know everything there is to know and nothing happens.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the best examples is yellow fever. You know, yellow fever is still a very important disease. And this occurs even in the face of the fact that probably one of the best vaccines ever made, a 17D vaccine, is available. And it's virtually 100% effective. It's very long-lived antibody protection. It's very inexpensive. And yet there are thousands of people each year coming down with yellow fever. And this is really becomes a public health delivery issue of getting the vaccine to where it's necessary, maybe incorporating it into the childhood vaccine programs in places like Africa and South America.
When you say public health in this context, though, it sounds even bigger than that, it's really a political, more broadly a political, both of will, resources, and a range of other kinds of things.
Oh, yes. And many, many vector-borne diseases, as you would imagine, are socioeconomic diseases.
In what sense?
Well, you know, if you increase the standard of living, you start doing things like having screened homes, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it sounds trivial. It's not. This is a major, major undertaking in parts of the world. But those sorts of things control a lot of vector-borne diseases and other diseases. You know, water treatment and so forth are critical for public health.
Again, I go back. When you say you're talking about the world, it's very easy in a developed nation to say somebody else's problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not true.
Well, we say that, and you know, but vector-borne diseases pop up here too. We have issues like Lyme disease, La Crosse encephalitis, Eastern equine encephalitis causes a great deal of anxiety on the East Coast of the United States
indeed,
each year.
Indeed. If you solve one will you have at least addressed the others? Are they that closely linked? Is this looking for fundamental points of entry in the disease process?
Well, one always hopes that that your research is broadly applicable, but not always. They are different viruses. They are different vectors, different malaria parasites, so forth and so on. But a lot of the, for example, one of the issues has always been how much do mosquitoes move and so forth. And so there's been a lot of work in population genetics. And a lot of this has evolved with new, what we call genomic markers, et cetera. And these approaches and so forth are broadly applicable. They can be applied to Anopheles gambiae and malaria transmission in West Africa. They can be applied to Aedes aegypti movement and dengue transmission in the Americas or Southeast Asia and so forth. And so they're giving us a lot of insight into the lifestyle of these mosquitoes. And once you understand more about that, then you should be able to target control efforts in a much more efficacious manner.
You work more broadly with arthropods, and my recollection is that includes a lot of critters.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about mosquitoes. And two things. One, is it just mosquitoes and fleas and ticks, or are there diseases floating around amidst millions of these other creatures? And I would assume, once you've opened up this black box you talk about, that some of the techniques you use with that can be applied, can be taken, at least some of the thinking can be taken from looking at mosquitoes to looking at ticks.
Oh, I think so, for sure. For example, the black box is being opened, and we're finding all sorts of arthropod-specific genes that that may well be target for control or immunization strategies and so forth.
Who are the other guys?
When you say arthropod specific, you're talking about the gene that distinguishes arthropods from everybody else?
No, these are genes that we've identified using modern molecular strategies in mosquitoes, in ticks, in regivide bugs and so forth. And, you know, like, for example, two target organs are really of interest, and there are a number of labs all over the world now that are starting to look at these issues. One is the midgut. This is, for example, with mosquitoes, only the female mosquito transmits pathogens. She's the one that takes blood meals. And so we're trying to understand how the parasite or the virus infects the midgut. You know, could you somehow define receptors or targets in the midgut that maybe could be included in immunization strategies so the parasite couldn't get in and get around to the salivary glands and then be transmitted? The other organ system is the salivary glands. Can you stop somehow salivary gland transmission? And so these molecules, when they're defined, you know, for blood feeding in a mosquito, may well have a homolog or something like some similar, at least functionally similar gene in a tsetse fly or in a regivide bug transmitting Chagas disease in Brazil, so forth and so on. So there's a lot of insight coming into this. All these variety of parasites and viruses and bacteria, et cetera, have hitched a ride on blood feeding, hematophagy, we call it, of arthropods. And so, you know, it's obviously an efficient way to do this. And so they've hooked into the biological drive of arthropods. They take, like mosquitoes take the blood meal in order to have an ovarian cycle. So you're hooked right into that driving force of this organism. And you're not out in the environment being exposed to UV or, you know, bad, nasty chemicals or whatever. So hopefully we can extrapolate from these different areas. And there's just been marvelous things discovered. For example, a fellow named Richard Titus, who's now at CSU, and his colleague Jose Ribeiro showed some time ago that when you work with these arthropod-borne agents, you really can't satisfy Koch's postulates, if you remember back to this famous microbiologist where you take a cause of a disease, you isolate the pathogen, you inject it back in, and you get the disease. Well, it turns out that many of these parasites, and now we've shown viruses too, and others have also, they actually go through with the saliva into the new host. And arthropods that feed on vertebrates, you know, they've evolved this probably 300 million years. So they have very potent ways of down-regulating your immune response, down-regulating your hemostatic response, and so forth. And so sometimes you'll take a pathogen and inject it, and you get no disease, no infection, replication. Well, Jose and Richard Titus showed that if you inject the parasite with the saliva, you get a bang-up infection. So the parasites not only have developed a way to get around in the arthropods, but the arthropod helps ensure their infection and replication and successful cycle maintenance. Our, little beasts.
Our guest who is describing these arthropods who are more clever than you might imagine is Dr. Barry Beatty. He is a professor of microbiology, and he directs the Arthropod-Borne and Infectious Diseases Laboratory at Colorado State University. Bill Russell and I are with him in Taos, New Mexico. We're going to be back for a couple more minutes in just a minute. Please stay with us.